Sunday! Every Sunday, side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Ray Guarino and Jody calls them as they sees them, and you better believe them. Hear relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! It's mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Ray and Joe cuss each other down track, barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Eat, Ray Guarino and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free every Sunday at noon on WHBC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway sign. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass.
Hey, you, yep, you found it. You've tuned that dial down to the left side, and you found Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show here on Long Island with your hosts, Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer, with the only crowd who can take a bushel of lemons and make a tasty lunch out of it that you're going to love to consume. You're going to just be puckering when you get through this hour with us.
Something's going to pucker.
One end or another. You're going to be puckering.
From either end.
If you watched our public, our social media, our Twitter and Instagram feeds, of course, that would be Motormouth Radio on Twitter and the web and on Facebook and on Instagram. It's real. _MotorMouthRadio. You would have seen that we had a guest scheduled today who still may pop in. You never know. Sometimes these guys come, they come in. And mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Fiat's and the Lemons rally, but we'll just talk about it to ourselves. So
exactly. Yeah. Well, hey, it's the magic of live radio. We know this. And we're always very glad when our listeners go, like we do.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, then we got to listen to you guys babble for the next hour. No big deal. We make a show out of lemons. If not, we end up with a big bushel of lemons to get you to pucker.
Hey, look, I'm a big fan of lemon meringue pie. I love, as we typically do, we'll go on the, you know, we cross over into the food thing. We haven't done that in a little while. But I'm not a big fan, as the other members of my household are, of lemons on their seafood. I'm not a fan. I don't like that.
Okay.
I don't like lemons on my broccoli, you know. But I really like lemonade, and I like lemon meringue pie and lemon Italian ices. But I don't want the lemon on my food. It's just like, no. That to yourself.
No. Lemon on the food. Okay. Yeah. Write that off for Ray.
Right.
So how are you this week, Ray? Anything magnificent happening going on?
You know, automotively, it was kind of a slow week. I've been in a little bit of a, well, we've had a couple things going on that diverted me from stuff like that. But I also had, I got a couple things I have to do. I have some mundane maintenance I have to do that I haven't gotten to yet. But what I did do this week is something mechanical, but not automotive. I rebuilt a pair of the speakers that are in my garage.
You rebuilt your speakers?
Yes, and if you stay tuned to those social media sites I mentioned, you'll see. I plan on posting the pictures. Yeah, I have a set of speakers, Sirwin Vega speakers, that are in my garage. And I noticed 2 weeks ago, my buddy Jeff came over. I told you about that last week. No, I didn't, because we had Matt Stone last week.
Right.
Jeff had come the week before to readjust the door glass in my Pontiac, because after getting it out of the body shop, it needed to
be. When we last left you, that was supposed to be in the works.
Right. So Jeff did that on a Thursday. And, of course, I had the garage stereo on, and I had it a little louder than usual so he could hear it in the driveway.
Right.
And I heard a little bit of a flubbing noise. I'm like, hey, shouldn't sound like that. And
Flubbing, Ray? What? There was flubbage going on in the garage?
So, right. So I pulled the grill off the speaker, and I saw that the foam was, you know, cracked and damaged.
Turning to dust.
And I knew that I had refoamed those already, because the reason I got those is because the foam was shot and my friend's dad was throwing them out. And I said, hey, I could use a set of Sirwin Vega bookshelves. Those are good speakers.
Sure.
And it didn't make sense why the foam fell apart, because I knew, I thought I just, like we talk about, gee, I thought I just did it like 2 or 3 years ago, right?
20 years later.
Well, I tell you what, I was looking through my emails, and there's a couple companies I dealt with, because I've done a number of those jobs over the years for other people. Now, I also farm myself out, so you know how it goes. And I couldn't determine where that, I couldn't find a receipt for those speakers. But when I pulled the driver out of the cabinet, you know me and my Sharpie, on the back of the magnet, I wrote, refoamed 02-2010.
Wow.
They were 10 years ago that I had refoamed them.
Wow. And we probably have an episode of Motormouth Radio with you talking about it. I wouldn't
we
be surprised.
We very well might. We
yes.
So,
because I vaguely remember this. I vaguely remember you talking about refoaming your Sermon Vegas. Yes.
Right. So I dealt with this company called Simply Speakers. They're down in Florida. And they sell you the foam kits. And they also had now, I mean, the two foam surrounds are only, they're like $26. But then they sold actually a sealer that you could like brush over the foam to let it last longer.
Oh.
But the sealer is like $11. So that's half the price of the, almost half the price of one of the foams. So I wrote to them and said, hey, what's the deal with the sealer? I played dumb. I said, would one want to use that sealer if the speakers are, you know, used in a home or apartment, or would that be best used if they were in a location where maybe the temperature varies, like in a garage or a shop, like my garage, you know, where it's down to, the teens in the winter. And
yeah, I was going to ask, does weather have a factor? Is a factor in the speaker, in the foam disintegrating the way it did?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, well, I don't know if it did or not, but it ends up, they said, yes, that's a perfect application for using this sealer. It will help where there's weather shifts and humidity shifts and all of that. So I said, all right, I'll take the sealer for $11. And that was my project during the week. You know, it was a matter of first, the foam just falls apart, but now the foam has a lip on it that gets glued to the metal ring of the speaker.
Right.
So that you use a razor blade, and I put some brake clean on and softened it, and I have used a whiz wheel with my the Scotch wheel. But now where the foam was glued to the speaker itself, that's another problem. Let me tell you, the problem that I found was the foam fell apart, but the glue was still 100% intact. So to get it off the speaker, it was tearing some of the speaker paper. I said, okay. I think it was like maybe a 1-inch section that happened to. And it was only taking like one layer. And luckily, it's a multi-layer speaker paper.
Yeah, right. The paper element is multi-layered. But still, you can't lose a layer, right?
I came in and I emailed these guys again down at Simply Speakers. And I said, listen, this is the deal. This is what's happening. The glue is so good that it's hanging on. And I sent pictures. They wanted me to send them pictures. And the one guy, Sean, wrote back and said, yeah, listen, we've had that happen to us. And if you can remove just that one little layer and not go deeper, he says, we've had to do that in order to save a speaker. So,
wow.
I said, okay, here we go. So I found I could really get it nice and uniform, and it was really just like, tissue paper thin. So that's what I did. So, it took a matter of days, because then you glue and you let them dry, and, it's, I'm not rushing it. I let it take like about three days to do the process,
Wow.
And now I put them back together yesterday, and they sound great, and I'm back in business. So
amazing. So that was your week was spent audioly, that's a word, instead of automotively.
Little here, little there, and and that's kind of what we do. So
sounds good. Well, let me tell you, I am insulted this week. I was insulted this week by a couple of things, and one of them being, I got into the Explorer utility, and I hit the key, started up, and all of a sudden I heard a chime. Bing, that I have not heard before. And I looked down, and on the prompt, in place of my speedometer, comes up on the display, you have to change your oil soon. And I'm like, what? What are you kidding me? I'm the guy who changes the oil every 3,000 miles. You are telling me when I have to change my oil. You are telling me when I have to Gee, well, here I am talking to my dashboard, right?
Yeah, I believe it.
I'm like, you dirty old YI-Auto, if I had a rock, I'd... Ugh. So, of course, what do? I go and change the oil, obviously. But the funny thing was, I keep a record, just like you do, because some of you kind of rubs off, and I keep a record of when the last time I changed the oil. Because when you have more than one vehicle in your... in purview, it's kind of tough to remember when you've done it.
Weren't you the boob that used to actually write the date on the oil filter?
I used to write the date on the oil filter. Okay. Yes, in order to find at a slider to the car.
I've seen that in a shop. I'd be like, yeah. And the guy who wrote this, like, who's under here to check this? No, nobody. Because now it's me, and like, this thing is way out of date.
Yeah, because I'm like, why did I write the date on the oil filter? I don't see it unless I'm under the car.
If you hung a tag on the hood, maybe that would. But that's why you put the sticker on the window. You know? Well,
what I do is I don't like the sticker on the window. What I do is I tear the lid off of the oil filter box. And I usually put all the information on that, and then I stick it right to the wall of the garage. So if I need to know when, I take it off the wall of the garage, and I look, and sure enough, yeah, I'm just looking. Our web know-it-all says this guy who writes on the inside of his speaker.
Right. Good thing I did. You know, let me add to the oil.
Thank
filter.
You, web know-it-all.
Let me add a little bit to the oil filter lid.
Yes, please do.
Because if you, I have a metal cabinet in my garage that has stuff in it, and if you open that cabinet and you look down the spines, all you're going to see is oil filter, the lids of oil filter boxes.
Okay.
And for my Mazda, there's maybe two or three filters that I might use, so I'll have the three different boxes, so I know what the part number is for each one. But what I do is on usually the back of one of them, I turn it around and I write on it how many quarts of oil the car takes.
Yes.
What the size of the drain bolt is.
Yes.
Is it a 15 millimeter wrench? And what, like, if like the oil filter has a hex, what size hex that is? Because all the cars are different. And now at a glance, I know what tools to take to do the, instead of going brilliant. Through the whole, right?
It's totally brilliant. And what I've done, taking it that much a step further, is I'll put down when I did the last brake flush. At what mileage, and when the air filter was done, at what mileage, at those things, I'll just copy over the information from one oil filter lid box lid to the other. So at least I'll know that information, and now I know I have about another 4,000 miles left before I change the air filter in the car as well, because I'm not going to get a little prompt on my dashboard telling me to change the air filter.
No.
So, because I don't feel like getting insulted again.
Well, let me ask you this. What you're talking about is actually the oil filter monitor. Now, that can be, that gets, you can reset that so that the car goes back to zero. Now, some cars are easy. Sometimes it's just a matter of on the stalk holding a button in, like your mileage, and it'll reset. Toyotas, I learned this from my daughter's RAV4, which now I've inherited that with this FJ. Mm-hmm. You have to go in and like make the odometer go into like odometer A, and then you have to hold turn with the key on, and you turn the key off, hold the button, it'll go to all zeros, and it goes all to all lines or whatever, and then it resets. Mm-hmm. Some car through the scan tools, you can reset the oil monitors.
Yes,
a lot of times. So if you don't do that, the thing is, the car still thinks you haven't changed the oil.
That's pretty much what probably happened here.
Right.
The car,
that's why I bring it up. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was trying to think if I had reset the oil filter, the oil change reminder on the computer. If I reset it, I don't remember if I did or I didn't. I didn't put that on the lid, and I should next time. Right. The oil reminder reset has happened.
So let me ask you, are you aware of how to do that on that vehicle? Or do you Okay.
Oh, yeah. You go into the computer mode. There's like a setup mode that you work straight from the steering wheel.
Right.
Right on the steering wheel. And what's nice is you have a volume control on one side of your steering wheel stalk. And on the other side, you have basically the four arrows to go through the modes in the onboard computer. So it was done through that. Minutes. It didn't take long at all. And it was really quite self-explanatory. So it really wasn't that bad. But that was only the first time I got insulted. Oh. I got insulted a second time this week.
Really?
We had the driveway sealed.
Nice.
Yeah, because we had a whole bunch of little rocks and everything, and we were dragging them into the house. And, of course, the wife is like, on the hardwood floor, you can't have rocks. Yeah. Okay, you know, minor details, no big deal. But she wanted the driveway sealed. We go get the driveway sealed. So we had a driveway service come and seal the driveway. I swear to you, Ray, these guys were like Olympic driveway sealers. They just they ran in with brooms and a hose and the truck and there it was like the world's record of curling going on my driveway. There's brooms going everywhere and this hose following this hose and it's gushing out this tar and everything. Well, anyway, 18 minutes later, they're all back in the truck and they're gone. So, of course, the next day when it dries, I go out there and I look, there's a whole bunch of spots that they missed.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, you know, what, you seal in the driveway, what's going on? So I call the guy back. So he gets all miffed and he goes, my guys never, never miss a spot. Well, come here, Bunky, and take a look. Yeah. So, of course, he shows up and there's a whole bunch of spots. So now he starts telling me, he starts giving me this baloney about, well, maybe you parked your car on the driveway and your car leaked. And I went, what'd you say? Can I have that back again? What'd you say? Yeah. What'd you say, Bunky?
Yeah.
And he says, well, maybe your car leaks. I said, my cars don't leak, pal.
Yeah.
I said, the ones in the garage do. I said, but the ones I park here in the driveway, no, they don't leak. Who are you? Who are you, you little punky? I was going on and on. Why don't you just say something nasty about my parents? You tell me something.
Yeah,
tell
right.
me my car's leak.
Right.
My car's leak. You tell me. You're telling me my car's leak.
Yeah.
So mind you, he didn't get a tip.
Okay. So what do we do about the spots? Anything?
He actually shows up. This guy, out of the trunk of this little car, he comes out with like a 5-gallon spackle bucket. It's filled with that tar.
Yeah.
And he starts with a paintbrush, Ray. Yeah. He starts painting on the driveway with a paintbrush.
Yeah. Spot sealer.
Yeah. And now he's telling me, well, you know, you're going to have different colors. You're going to have patches on your driveway. I said that problem would have been alleviated if you had done the job correctly the first time.
Yeah.
So,
well,
mind you, no tip for him.
I tell you what, if you're a driveway sealer, a tar bender or tar breather, or have a story of your own, give us a call, 516-256-9510, and we'll be happy to talk about it. I have something that's bugging me. You know, I get, as I watch TV, you know, I'm very critical of my automotive shows when I watch them. And
you? Know that. Really? Yeah. You? Really? Yeah. You?
I found another thing that ticked me off.
Uh-oh, what? Tell me.
Sometimes counting, it's just somebody's voice.
Oh, I was going to say the whole show of counting cars, but no.
No, right, sometimes it's just the way someone looks. No, I've been watching, and this goes for the TV shows as well as the stuff that I watch on YouTube, because I watch a lot.
Can we stop you for a second and we'll take a phone call?
Yes, let's do that.
Let's do that and say hi. You're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hey, what's going on, Chris? What's going on, Ray? It's Mike Jr.
What's up, brother love? How are you?
Going on? How are you?
Doing well. What's going on?
I'm not a tar breather, but I have an automotive question for you guys.
Okay.
What is it?
This will be good.
Yeah, exactly. You know more than we do.
I'm getting a rear end for my El Camino, and I got to pick it up this coming week, and I need to know, how do I check it to make sure it's good? Because it's just sitting in some guy's driveway, and I don't know what to do. So I either need help or someone to come with me and check it, a.k.a. Maybe you, Ray.
He needs a proctologist.
Yeah. you know, with the rear end mic, and especially one that was rebuilt, there's not too much you can do, I mean, because it hasn't been in service. So you're not going to know, I mean, if it leaks until it gets hot. I mean, really, the only thing you can do is you spin the hubs and make sure that they spin freely, and that they both spin the same direction. That would mean it's a positive traction. And if the owner agrees to it, you would pull the rear cover off and take a look and make sure that the gears are new. And the guy may be like, hey, you pull the cover, you know, but until, you know, you never know. It's like buying a car, you know, it's like, how far is the guy going to let you go? You know, if he's really legit, maybe he'll have some
cover.
He will.
Okay. Yeah. Then we take a look inside and inspect it. You know, if he's really legit, he may have some receipts from the place that rebuilt it. And then, you know, any documentation also goes a long way to help. But when what you look for when you pull that cover is a rebuilders use a yellow, typically a yellow paint that they paint on about a 6-inch section of the ring gear. And then they spin the rear end and look at the path, the depth of the pinion in the ring gear. And it becomes a witness mark in that yellow paint. If it's too deep, that means it has to be shimmed out. If it's too shallow, that means it has to be shimmed the other way. And they just adjust that as they go. So, yeah, I'll be happy to go with you. You know that. Especially if it's in Schenectady. If it's a road trip, it's even better. But give me a reason to get out of here, Mike. Help me. Yeah. Not a problem.
So, so Ray will be your proctologist.
We'll make plans. I'm not sure what day it is, but okay, we'll make plans, whatever's good for you.
Yeah, very good. Very good. So that's, you know, it's funny because just this past week, I sent Mike a text, Chris, to remind him that it was his 1-year anniversary of owning that Monte Carlo, the El Camino.
Wow.
Time flies when you're buying cars, huh? You know?
Mike, what year is it? What year is it?
86.
Oh, it's okay. I like to think it's a new one.
No, they don't make new El Caminos.
I don't think
it's new to me. It's an 86. If you would have said it was like a 68 ago, it's an old one. Or a 59, it's an old one. It's an 86. It's a new one.
It's the newest of the ones that they made, I guess.
Right. It's the late model Monte Carlo. That's cool. I love it.
El Camino.
Oh, El Camino. Well, I'm doing F&B. What you're doing. I'm saying Monte Carlo.
I know. Don't follow me. So, Mike, that brings up the great question. You know, we talk about this all the time, and I was out with Kilowatt Kevin last night. We were talking about cars and things, and he's like, gee, you know, you guys, you and your dad, of course, you always come up in my conversations, and he said, geez, how many cars are those guys up to now? And I'm like, gee, I lost count. I don't know. I said, Junior's getting as bad as his father. It's like, you know. But God bless. I mean, that's great. I mean, that, you know, you do what you you do what you want to do.
Do what you love.
What is your count, by the way, right now? What are you up to?
That may take a second to figure out.
He's got to take off his shoes.
Just the fact that you have to say that gets you street cred. Just the fact that you have to say that.
I was worse off before. I got rid of a few, so I was worse off before, but I'm a little better now.
He's more restrained. He's more articulate when it comes down to plunking down some cash on the hood.
Yeah.
You didn't sell anything.
Right?
The Crown Vic. That was all.
The Crown Vic, yeah.
That was last year. That was a year and a half ago.
That was last summer.
Yeah,
I was there when the guy drove away with it.
Oh, that was one of them.
Yeah, that was one of them. Yeah, the other one I sold
last
summer.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen you in a year, and I saw the guy drive away with it.
Chris, you missed the whole thing with the boat coming into the circle.
Crying out loud. The drama never ends. Boy.
Hey.
All right. Well, it's only an hour show. Mike, thanks for the call, my brother.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
We'll talk to you soon. Be safe.
All right, Mike. Catch you later. Oh, that's great.
516, what is it? 256, I can't read my handwriting. 9510 is the phone number to get a hold of us here at Motormouth Radio.
Correct.
Yeah, so you were in the process of, you were having those big black ears removed from the side of your head.
Yeah, the new thing I take a lot of offense to on the TV shows, the car shows, and on the YouTube videos are guys who work on a project that's clean. Like I was watching some FJ videos, and the guy was doing some interior stuff. He was adding USB ports and changing the radio. That you don't get cleaner work than that.
No, of course not. That's probably the cleanest automotive work you're going to do.
and he's wearing the surgical gloves. I was like, you moron. Like, what do you want to show your fingernails? Like, hey, you're not changing the rear end. You're not doing a tranny job. You're not doing front end work or brakes. You're doing interior work, for Jesus. Oh, my.
Ray, you could like end up with like a chewed up piece of Wrigley's gum or something. You could end up with a French fry in your fingernail. Holy smokes, where did that used lollipop come from? Oh, my gosh.
You know, I saw it the first time, and I went, ugh. And then now it got, like, it's circling me. So now, like, the second time, now I see it, and I'm like, it's like slowly I turn. Like, another idiot with this. It's like, I mean, like I said, you're doing dirty, greasy work. Yes, I'll wear the gloves, too, when it's particularly greasy. But interior work? Come on. You break.
You may end up, you know, getting a burn on that velour. You may get a rug burn or something.
So that's my new pick of the day. That's my new... The thing I love to hate about the TV and YouTube is that...
Let me tell you, if you want to talk about... I must admit, when I start working on those door panels for the Chrysler, I am going to be wearing some gloves, young man, because I never saw such dirtiness come out of a box.
Well, I'll tell you, when you... Like, you know, okay, see, when you're going to clean them and get them ready, I get it. I'll go with you on that one, sure.
Last week before the show, thankfully we were able to see each other here in this new technological marvel that we have in front of us. I took the opportunity and showed you, Ray, the door panel that I purchased from a old convertible sitting in the yard for 20 years. And of course, the door panels, even though I was told, I was forewarned that these are not good door panels at all, yet I purchased them anyway, and the previous owner was certainly correct. They are not. But it's exactly what I was looking for. And you had the greatest question. You looked at me dead in the face and said, how much of that door panel are you going to use? And I said, all of it. Mm. And the look on your face was of sheer astonishment.
And I said that because I did pick up, there was a rip. There was a tear in it. And and then the next question was, well, how are you going to fix that tear?
Right, right. And there are different ways. And like you said, like you, I've been doing my research on it. I haven't touched them yet.
Right, right.
But yeah, there's going to be some chemicals involved. There's going to be some wearing of respirators involved as well as surgical gloves. Right. Yeah, it's going to be involved. But I want to. I'm hoping to record most of it in picture and movie form, because the issue is the door panel, and this is typical Chrysler insanity, because in the way I feel that Chrysler paid more attention to their bean counters in the 60s and 70s than they did their engineers and their stylists, because a lot of materials, and a lot of people will say this without probably yelling and screaming, but they probably would say it anyway, a lot of the materials that came out of these cars were junk.
Yeah.
The plastic, the leather is junk. The plastic, the vinyl, I should say, whatever they used for vinyl, is just, it doesn't wear well. But then again, we're talking about something that's been out in the elements for 20 years and is 50 years old. Exactly. So of course it's going to be junk. Exactly. Everything is going to be junk.
Yeah, you're right.
If you subject it to what this has been subjected to, I should say.
Before we take our bottom of the hour break, I just want to tell you something. Kevin and I were watching some. We went to dinner last night and we came back to the house watching some TV, watching YouTube videos, and I showed him, I turned him onto some of the channels that I follow that he wasn't aware of, and one of them is this Bud Lindemann. You remember Bud Lindemann?
Why does that name sound familiar?
Oh, it's familiar. You'll know Bud Lindemann. He, back in the 70s, was the guy that did all the car tests for, like, whatever it was, Motor Trend, Road and Track, and he usually had a spiffy, you know, like plaid sport coat and a tie, like Bud Lindemann here, and we're testing the new, you know, the new Delta 88, and every car that they ran, these, you know, we watched the 72 Riviera, we watched another one, it was a Buick, with a 73 Buick, and they're throwing these cars around the course and talking about, look at the way they handle, like, in a car. It's like, it handles pretty good for a big car.
you see the radial tire is like tucked under the rim.
Buick is like, it's going off the road, hitting the dirt, you know.
But front bumper's scraping the ground.
The one thing that a lot of these big cars, the Riviera, the big Buicks, the big Chevys, something that they all did pretty well, amazingly, was the braking tests.
Yeah. And, you know, they do like 30 to zero, and then they went like, I think it was 30 to zero and maybe 40 and 50, or maybe 30, 50 and 60 to zero. And, you know, it was, I mean, compared to today's stopping distances, and they were, you know, they were, the numbers are terrible. But my point is the cars stayed straight. Maybe right at the end that the tail would hook a little bit and just like, but phenomenally, just stay straight. And I was like, I told Kevin, I said, you know, besides the tire smokes, they do full lockup stops.
Sure.
I said, if those cars had some kind of an ABS on them, given that they're already stopping straight without ABS,
right?
I'm like, I think that would have been a huge improvement, you know, on safety. And it wouldn't have taken much, you know, going by looking at these road tests. So, yeah, watching the old Bud Light, it's like watching Chris Economaki. You know, you watch these. Now,
Chris Economaki.
I realize that our audience that's under 50 just said, what the heck is he talking about? but I know the guys who are over 50 are like, yeah, Chris Economaki.
You know what was you used to crack me up about Chris Economaki was his voice, because you mentioned his voice. I mean, I used to love it because it used to pierce through the crowd. You'd get this crowd muffled noise, and then you heard, this is Chris Economaki. Like, it was just this razor-sharp timbre of a voice that you recognized instantly. You knew exactly who he was.
And I'm sure that's how he kept his job.
Yo, totally.
And something else that people recognize instantly whenever they hear it, be it live or be it on any of the podcast or rebroadcast of this show, is the Motor Mouth Radio. What the hell do you do at the bottom of the hour? That's the one.
What's
the honor group of the hour?
Ladies and gentlemen, the Motormouth Radio, what the hell do you do at the bottom of the hour?
Wait. Let me take another memory pill. Hang on. The old one didn't work. What do you got for us?
The look on your face was priceless. Like, where's he going with this?
That's why you have a co-host who knows what you're thinking.
Well, tonight on the Motormouth Radio, what the heck are we doing here at the bottom of the hour? We're celebrating anyone that celebrates Halloween using a vehicle. Do you have scary baubles and trinkets hanging from your front grill? Do you drop your kids off on one end of the block to trick-or-treat and then pick them up on the other end of the block? Do you scare little children with your long, freaky, dirty, cut-up fingernails? Well, if you're into a good trunk-or-treat, you're part of the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour. And there you go. The bottom of the hour. What the hell do we do here?
Yeah, very cool. Now I know what the... I'll make a note on that. I'll try and remember next week. Well, thank you. All right. So let's hear what our good buddies have to say over at Celebrity Chase Collision, because that's our favorite. My favorite place to go. That's for darn sure. I've used the place, and I have nothing but high praise for them. And then we will be back with more Motormouth Radio. Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer on 90.3 WHPC. This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Lynbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop you want to have your car fixed at. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
Shake off the realities of the day, broaden your musical horizons, and embrace the diversity every Monday afternoon at 5 for 2 hours of Revelations. The show offers a potently unique collection of music with an emphasis on themes and rock rarities, an occasional tour de force of blues and soul mixed with compelling sets of folk and folk rock. I'm Steve Kay, and I've got the perfect soundtrack for your drive home every Monday afternoon at 5. On Revelations, right here on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
Hey, have you seen DJ Solero?
No, why?
Well, he was supposed to be here right now to tell everyone about his show, The Rare Groove Session, but I can't find him anywhere.
I'll look for him. Maybe he got something to eat.
Food? He went to get food? I mean, who can eat at a time like this?
Relax. I'm sure everyone can figure out when they can listen to the most incredible music from the 60s and 70s that they may not have heard before.
But what if they can't? What if they never figure out when The Rare Groove Session is on? What happens then, huh? I don't want to live in a world where no one knows about The Rare Groove Session.
Hey guys, ready to tell everyone about RGS?
DJ Solero, where the f*** have you been?
I was getting something to eat.
How can you eat at a time like this?
What are you talking about?
Don't mind her. Go ahead and tell everybody when to listen.
Okay, whatever. So if you're looking for some mind-blowing music, check out The Rare Groove Session. Now at a brand new time, late Friday nights or early Saturday mornings at 2 a.m., depending on how you look at it. Exclusively on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
And we are back. Like it or not, you're stuck with us for another at least 20 minutes of this Motormouth Radio Soiree with Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer. You can give us a call at 516-256-9510 and talk about whatever it is you want to try and stump us. See if we can make us forget something. I'm sure it's not that hard to do.
I actually ordered some of the chrome lower lower trim that goes on the Chrysler 300.
Right.
And I ordered it for my friend in North Carolina. And the funny thing was, he asked me, he says, what should I ship it in? A long thin box or maybe PVC? And I'm like, PVC? I said, it can fit in PVC. He says, yeah, sure, it could fit. But now I'm thinking, this car that I have doesn't have the clips to go along with it. So I asked him, I said, Rob, can you send me the clips too? And he says, yeah. I says, whatever he can pull off the car, he'll pull off the car. Whatever doesn't break, he'll put it in a bag and send it. So I'm like, great. But now I'm thinking to myself, I have another project, potential project on the horizon here, and I have to figure this out. I have to put these panels on the car. I have to mount the clips on the car, and we're talking about the lower portion of the vehicle under the door, between the two wheels, between the front and rear wheels.
It's and like this a panel, rocker panel trim.
Yeah, rocker okay. panel, exactly. So, now, mind you, he sends it. I got it. It's in a tube that's like 7 feet tall. Yeah. It's in a PVC. You right. have to see the UPS guy get off the truck with this thing. It was hysterical because right. he's coming at me like Sir Lancelot with it. Like he's he's like he's gonna pin me to the garage wall with this thing.
Tell me, I'm Jesse Owens' cousin. I do the pole vault.
And for a second, I'm like, what in the world is that? So, of course, thankfully, I had the garage door open when we met here, and I just pointed at the car, and I went, it's all the car's fault, dude. It says, yeah. I have nothing to do with this. I'm trying to be compassionate. But the first thing I noticed was this thing was heavy. You figure how much can a 4-inch length of PVC weigh? It doesn't really weigh that much.
Yeah, 4-inch PVC is heavy.
Well, this thing is like twice as heavy. And it's not rattling, so it's pretty loaded up. I haven't opened it yet.
Okay.
But now I have to like get into the mind of the proctologist here, the rear end guy.
All right.
I have to dip into your kernel of knowledge and try and figure out how would you line up a car to install rocker panel molding. What would you do?
Okay, well, I did install the rocker panel trim on my car, but it had been on there before.
Right, so you have... My question is,
what kind of clips hold that rocker panel molding on?
It is a long rectangular clip about the size of maybe like a pack of gum.
That's what's
like
on my car.
Like a pack of Juicy Fruit. It's okay. got two holes. Now, this is what I've seen in the picture. It's got a hole like in the upper portion, upper third of it. There's a hole there. And it's an oval. It's not just a single hole.
All right.
So there's an allowment for adjustment. And then there's a hole in the bottom that's almost like a little smile.
Yeah.
So it can rock, I guess, back and forth. It's like a pendulum almost. It can fore and aft a bit.
Uh-huh.
And I have to put two holes in the rocker and to allow for two screws, I guess, to mount that clip. You know, and now I have to go find more clips too, which is another, that's going to be another heartache, because I don't think I have, I think I have about half of what I need.
I'll look in one of the books I have. The way mine mounts is a little different, and I think it's kind of standard. Mine had a it's a rectangular clip with a hole on the top that was a little slotted, but the bottom had a little piece that came out perpendicular from the clip that had like a T, looked like a T. Okay. And there was a hole, two holes in the car. So the, mm-hmm. the piece of the T piece went into the bottom hole on the car.
Okay.
On the body. And then you lay it up against the body, and then you put the screw in the top. So there's really only one mm-hmm. screw that held it. And then got the molding it. Just clips on, you know, it right. just clips on top and bottom. So knowing that the molding is going to go maybe a 16th of an inch lower than the bottom of your clip,
right.
I think I would lay that molding up and maybe put some tape on the car and use a Sharpie to mark it off, and then use that guide to go a 16th higher to mount those clips. And,
got it.
You know, the factory had, I think my car has maybe, my car's shorter than yours too, but between the front and rear wheels, I think I had maybe 6 or 8 clips, the length of the car. Your car okay. may have 10, you know, 7, 8, 10, I don't know. You can use any number you want, really. I mean, you could use what the factory had. You could obviously do whatever you want.
Sure. Well, I'd like to keep it somewhat of the factory specs. I mean, no one's going to look at the clips in the car, but then again, you don't want it falling off either.
No. So. And the beauty of it is, yeah, once it's together, no one sees what's underneath. You know,
right.
You don't know. But yeah, I would look into the exact mounting. I'll see if I can find some information for you. And yeah, the problem with that too is like when I did that, I had the car on the lift, so I had it up, you know, 3 feet up, so I could sit at a stool and work at this height.
Yeah, so, yeah,
you want to do something like that? I mean.
Oh, I've already got the. I'm not doing it while all four wheels are on the ground. I got to pick it up on one side, and I'm probably going to do exactly what you said. I'm going to have it doing the list. I'm going to have it leaning to one side, and then pick it up, do that, and then drop it, spin it around, and pick it up, because I can't work. Since the car is on one side of the garage, obviously the driver's side I can't work on because you don't have enough room unless I start moving lawnmowers around. So it's easier for me to just turn the car around, just do one chrome trim, turn around, do the other chrome trim.
Sure.
But yeah, and the, you know, this is the funny thing. This is what's nice about driving a car that is not a show car. It's nice. I always say it's a 10-footer. It's probably better 20-footer. But when I was discussing price and condition, he said, basically the seller said to me, it's got a crease down the side of it. It's not bad, but it's just a little crease. And he said a guy with a 10-point car turned him down.
Yeah.
He didn't want those rocker moldings because he didn't like that crease. So not only did I have the opportunity to pick him up, but I got him at a very good price. And it's on something that, and mind you, if I find another one that's in better shape, I could swap it out.
You know,
what's a big deal?
That's what I did with all the stuff I had polished, and I spent a lot of money on polishing.
I'm sure you did.
I had the rockers done from the first guy who didn't do the best job compared to the second guy.
Right.
But when it came to the rockers, and there was a little bit of a blemish on one of them, I said, you know what? These are going on the way they are. It's the lowest part of the car. You really don't – I mean, you do see them because from a distance, it is a piece of bright work.
Right.
I think you see the wheel well moldings a lot more because they're bright and they really pop against the paint.
Sure.
So I said, hey, you know what? For now, they're going on the car. If in the future, just like you said, if I find a set that's better or I come across an inheritance where I can, you know, pay to have these polished by the other guy, I'll go for it. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not a show car. So you pick and choose where you're going to spend that time and money.
Exactly. And this is something I've noticed a lot of people doing. They shoot for that show car. They want that show car. And they will do anything to acquire that. And mind you, life gets in the way. I have seen more cars online for sale that are restoration started or you see it, it's a shell. Like they probably spent 3 weeks just tearing the whole thing apart, and now you have a liability sitting there instead. It's now you have a piece of furniture that's lucky if it rolls.
You know what I say
to that, my stock answer has always been, be careful what you ask for. You might just get it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, even now, like, I don't consider my car a show car. Like you said, yeah, I could put it in a local show and compete, but...
Yeah, and it would do very, very well, your car. It looks great.
Yeah, but, you know, yeah, thanks to the guys at Celebrity Chase. They did a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. But, and again, that's a whole other side topic that's kind of cool. I was talking to someone about that this week that I'll mention. But, you know, the thing is now, yeah, I now have to be super careful about this car because now you got to, you know, or just throw stuff on it. You got to be, you know, now you have that responsibility
yes.
of taking care of it. So it's right. kind of nice. You don't have to worry about that. But I was talking to Jeff, the glass guy. And I said, you know, it's kind of funny. You know, he's doing a job inside a door that no one's ever going to see or know about. You know,
sure.
They just want to know the windows work. Oh, of course the windows work. They don't know what it takes to make those windows work.
Right, right.
There's a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, you know, the reality of it is, you look out here, I said, it's the painter that gets all the glory. I said, because all people see is that paint, and they see the chrome, and then, you know, if it's a polisher who did it, the polisher gets the nod, or if you bought the when you buy the chrome. I said, those are the guys that get all the glory. They don't want to know about who was in the doors, who did the mechanical work. Gee, how'd you make those great brackets? You know, all the stuff that I love to spend all my time doing.
Yes.
And that's why I've always said, I'm not one to have my car judged because who's better than me to tell me what I did right or wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a friend will tell me, you know, I value that. If a friend tells me, hey, you know what? I like the way it looks. You did a great job. That to me means a lot because it's unsolicited and it's from someone who I know knows what they're looking at. Or if a friend says, hey, you know what? Why'd you do that? I don't like it. I take it to heart and I'll entertain that and say, oh,
a friend, you know, or a co-host.
A co-host. Very true, because at least I know where it's coming from. You get a car show judge, you don't know who these guys are. These yahoos could be, they could be, listen, I've been a judge since the late 70s. I've recruited guys from the clubs.
And you've been a yahoo even longer, which is
I have been. And I know some of the guys I had on my judging teams weren't really cut out to do it, but I needed a warm body. You need somebody right. who can just fill out a piece of paper. So, you know, you double check the guy, you know, you partner him with somebody who's.
And you knew I didn't mind when you double checked me.
No, I know. Yeah.
I did. Because it was like, you looked at me and went, yeah, he's a warm body, at least on most of the days of the week. Bring him in.
But on that note, I did find a way of, I didn't pioneer it. It was actually the Oldsmobile, our friend Bobby, the guys in the Oldsmobile Club who did it years and years ago. Yeah. And then I kind of took from that. Instead of going by the old judging sheet, I have copies of them in my desk here somewhere, the 100-point sheet, you break it down into big chunks of the car. So you say, okay, you know, exterior and trim, you know, paint. You look at paint, trim, and you can put interior in there. There's one category.
Right.
And then you could say wheels and undercarriage. There's another, and trunk. You know, there's another category.
Okay.
And then you can do engine and drivetrain. And there's another category. And what you do is I say, Chris, you're going to judge, you know, the paint and the interior. But you're going to do it on every car that we judge. So
wow.
You're going to do every paint and interior. I'm going to do every engine and drivetrain. You know, the Jim Bob over here is going to do every... You know, every trunk and undercarriage. Whatever. So you do the same thing on every car. So you should be repeatable through however many cars you judge. As should I. As should be however many judges you have going.
That's pretty cool.
It is. It works. It works. Mm-hmm. And then the only thing you have to teach people is, okay, if your category is worth 20 points, when you walk up to that first car, let's say you know ahead of time, you know, we have, say, 25 cars in this category.
Right.
So we're going to do 25 of them. You walk up to that first car and you say, whoa, this car is beautiful. 19. Give it a 19. You just gave yourself a 1-point margin for the car that's better.
Exactly.
And what if a car is 5 points better? So I'd always impress on people, kind of start in the middle. Be a middle of the road judger. Look at half scale as being good.
Mm-hmm.
So if the car is really good, instead of giving it 10, you know, out of the 20, maybe give that car a 13 or a 14 point. You know, you're still giving yourself, you know, extra points for that car that's going to really knock your socks off down the road.
Sure.
And if it never comes about, that's okay because you're going to be consistent. At least you'll be consistent, and it works. Guys are too afraid, you know.
And no, and I agree, because then let's say a 15 can be like your ultimate ceiling, leaving yourself a 5 point to that 20 mark. That 15 can be your highest point, and therefore be your highest point.
It becomes like the 20, right? And then what happens?
It becomes the 20. Exactly.
It just so happens that if the last car you see, they pull the cover off, and it's something that, you know, Chip Foose had brought in and you didn't know about. Well, you know, that car, you know, it's going to win, but now that car should represent a higher value, and now you can give it to it legitimately.
Yes.
So, right. Yeah. That's why I've done that. And again, I thank the Olds Club, because they did that many years ago. And I just kind of expanded on it, and yeah, I made my own sheets and whatever, whatever. And, you know,
I know very few times that I've helped judge, you kind of lose track, because you're always looking at. You look at the engine, you look at the interior, you look at the paint, you're looking at the chrome trim, you're looking at the car, you're looking at it. But then you have to go and start all over again at the next car. You're looking at the engine, you're looking at the tires, you're looking at the paint, you're looking at the trim. And then you have to get – and after a while, you kind of lose track. Did I check the trunk of that last car? Did I – so your way of doing it is nicer, because you have a shorter list of what you need to judge. –
Yeah,
and basically, I think it's something you can do more accurately than if you're taking in the whole car.
Instead of sending a guy out with a clipboard and saying, okay, judge those 25 cars or judge those 8 or 10 cars, now what you're doing is we're all going to go together. We'll all go to each car as a team, and we just break out, and we do, I'm doing what I'm doing, and you do what you do. And it lightens the workload. You know, many hands lighten, you know, make for easy work. It's worked on many, 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 many occasions.
I do like the way you and I judged. We used to do the car of the show. We do the Motormouth Radio pick.
We did the Long Island GTO show many years. We used to judge for them.
And I love the fact that I think we were exceptional in doing that job, because we both had such varied appreciation of vehicles. Yeah. Like, you liked this one group of vehicles, and I liked almost like a completely other group of vehicles with commonality in the middle. But it was pretty good. A wide array of talents to judge was pretty cool. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to the fun and say hi. You're on with the Motormouths.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. It's Bob Jones from the Olds Club. I heard you talking about us, so I thought I'd call in. How are you, Ray?
Wow, we got nailed. We actually had someone listening to what we were saying. Hey, Bobby.
Hey,
how are you, Bob?
Good. I wanted to say hello. Enjoy the show. And you know what? We still use those judging sheets.
You know what? When something works,
we do it each and every show.
When something works, you stick with it. And I had actually had the White Nomad, Chris, in. I put it in the Oldsmobile show at the Fireman's Field in Merrick. This is going back to like, I got 89, wow. 90, I don't know. And that's when I had gotten a copy of that sheet. And I was not even in the Impala Club yet. I became the chief judge of that club. But I was working with other clubs. And I took the sheet and said, hey, you know, the one, I know I'm not going to take a trophy out of this show, but I am taking this judging sheet with me. And I just, you know, and again, you know, I always felt that, you know, you just, you don't blatantly steal, you just adopt it and borrow the practice, and, you know, we keep it living on. But that's, Bob, again, thank you and the Olds Club for being revolutionary in that regard.
Yeah, thank you. You know, Ray, it's even today, I mean, we missed our show this past year, but when we do that show, I mean, people stay to the afternoon. They want their car judged. I don't know if there really are too many shows left that actually judge, but people are very, very interested in having their car judged and competing. And as you know, we do that 100-point sheet, you know, based on the condition of the car.
Right.
But we enjoy it. It's extra work. But we get out there and we do it exactly as the way you just mentioned, you know, teams and taking the same categories and so forth. But
and what's great is when you recruit, you know, when you recruit a new guy on the team, usually there's a lot of trepidation. But you say, hey, don't worry, you're with the rest of us and we're all seasoned. We'll show you, like, we'll bring you along, you know. It's like, you handle the bribes from the car owners for like the beer and the hot dog and the hamburgers and, you know, and all the other bribes that they want to throw at you. Because, boy, I've had some good ones over the years.
Yeah, that is good. You know, what we also do is 2 months before the show, we do a judging seminar. There's a fellow by the name of Ed. He has a nice big warehouse type shop in Farmingdale, and we pull in 2-3 cars. We pull in all the members, and the newer members or people that haven't judged before, you know, they're a little apprehensive. I remember my first time too. And what we do is we go over the car, we take a seasoned person, and we take them through judging a particular car. So you know, now we can, you know, we can take one of the members' cars and trash it, and all in good fun.
Sure, sure.
I've always said, but, Bob, yeah. that I was always kind of, what would you say, kind of humdrum with all of the types of awards that are, that can be won at car shows. They weren't creative enough. I always said I wanted to see awards like the best back seat. I wanted to see awards like the greatest boring story. I wanted to see awards like the best rotisserie that you put the model on when it spins on the air cleaner every time you open
right.
the hood.
Yeah.
You know, I always, oh, that's the greatest rotisserie I ever saw. Those were the things that I always felt that should have been, those are always the judging categories that I would like to see in car shows nowadays.
Well, funny, Chris, you mentioned that because there are a couple that we're trying to change with the times, right, and, mm-hmm. and make ourselves attractive to all car owners out there. And one of the things that has thrown us is we opened up a rat rod class. Now,
oh, wow.
How do you judge the rat rods, you know? And we had to sit down and go through that. I don't think we ever came up with a final sheet.
No, that's a tough
Ray, one. That's something to think about, right? Creativity.
Yeah, it's creativity.
Aesthetics.
I would go a step further, Bob. I would go creativity, but with the eye to, like, hidden safety. Something that's actually a safe car that looks like it's a death trap. You know, I would. See? That's kind of what would impress me, you know? But,
yeah.
Right.
That's,
hey Bob, we just let me ask you a question, Bob. We have it on our on your website, the Long Island New York City Olds Club website. Says the dust off is Sunday, May 2nd, 2021. Is that still confirmed for next year?
Yeah, 21, that's actually the date. Yeah, we've gone back to the first Sunday in May because it always rains on that day.
That would be,
yeah,
so
it does.
We didn't want to break tradition. But as you know, the fellows down at the town of Oyster Bay, and they actually have been great to us. We you know, that first year we were competing on that one day, and then after that we sit with Andy Rothstein and others, that whole team there, Kevin and Sarah and our good friend, I forget his name at the moment.
Our good friend, what's his name? Yes.
So, well, this is
the
this
one
is
that really
trend
does all the, he does all the work.
But, so as of today, that date is going to be good for 2021.
Yes. Okay. And actually, those guys down at Oyster Bay, they also ask us about judging. And they, you know, they took our form and stuff like that. So, you know, they have a huge show and they want to judge. So, we try to accommodate. But I'll let you guys go.
Yeah, we got to go, Ray, Bob. We're at the end of the show.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, I'll talk to you soon. I love your car.
Thanks for the call, Bob. Thank you.
Bye, Bob.
All right. Chris, that's it. Yes, Bob is right. We are at the end of the line here. It's time to get out of here so Kim can take over and do Thunder Road. And we'll be back next week with more Motor Mouth Radio. Hopefully, we'll get Matt in from Order of Combi. We'll do the Fiat show next week. Hopefully, he'll surface during the week. So with that, Chris, what do you say?
Don't follow us home.
All right. With that, for Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino, out of here. We'll see you next week. Bye.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Lynbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop you want to have your car fixed at. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.